Call the meeting to order. We have a quorum. Call the meeting to order of the Higher Education Finance Committee. And first order of business would be the minutes, if you find your minutes in the packet.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move approval.
Okay, Representative Charleston moves the minutes for Wednesday, March the 2nd. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And minutes are still approved.
They were good.
Must have been a delay thought. There were several times.
Yeah. Okay. There is a Ways and Means Committee going on at this time downstairs in room 200, and several of us will need to be there for a few minutes. So we will begin our testimony. Today we have the university students that are here. And again, thanks to everyone that is here this morning, or this afternoon. So I'd like to begin by calling, I guess, Emily. Okay, and then Dan Miller. And so I'll be handing the gavel to Representative Opatz for a time. Would you like to?
You're right. You can let me.
Yeah, I think we'll. Yeah.
Let's put it over here.
Is it Ms. Seraphie Cox or just Ms. Cox?
Ms. Seraphie Cox, yes.
Very good.
And congratulations on announcing it, especially most do not. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for having us here today. It is great to have a day of student voices. Student voices are often not heard here at the Capitol, and it's great to have this opportunity to tell you how things are for us at our universities. I'm sure that, as many of you know, and as every student knows, tuition is the biggest issue for us. Tuition and debt load, which is directly proportional often to tuition. While we're in school, high tuition causes us to have to do various things. One of them is to have a lot of jobs in college. Most college students work quite a few hours, at least part-time, many full-time, and while at the same time going to school full-time. If we're not going to have many jobs, or even sometimes if we are going to have many jobs, we also have loans and other ways that increase our amount of debt load after college. So that's one thing, negative thing to look forward to. Another thing while we're in school is the quality of education that we are able to procure while we're there. If we're working 20, 30 hours a week, obviously we cannot devote our entire energies to our education, which is why we're there. You know, if we're attending school full-time, I would love to be able to actually attend school full-time and be engaged in all of the plethora of learning opportunities that are available to me at the university, but I'm not able to do so because I have to work three jobs, literally. Once we get out of school, then, we have debt to look forward to, and, you know, for us, personally, it's a almost an unimaginable amount of money for me at this point. But also, in terms of the broader state of Minnesota, the more debt that students have when they get out of school, the less they are able to contribute to the economy of Minnesota and that sort of thing. And many, many students who come to Minnesota, even students from out of state, want to stay here. And so if we're looking forward to years down the road of these students after they've graduated with this increased amount of debt load is not going to be good for the Minnesota economy. Of course, we as students are here to say our own voices, so for my own voice, I would say that debt load is not good for me personally as well. that when I can't even imagine buying something, you know, like a car or a nice bicycle, because I like the bicycle, or a house even. People that I know who are 20 years down the road are thinking about finally buying a house. Well, I don't want to be in a rental situation for 20 years. I want to be able to engage in the economy and also be able to settle here in Minnesota. And so I think that just the money issue is really the biggest issue that I see for students. And those are just a couple of opening remarks for me. And I will turn it over to Dan Miller. Thanks. Do I ask for questions now?
I would certainly invite some questions if there are any. Representative Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, thank you for coming here today to share your story with us. I didn't catch if you said at the very beginning, but what are you studying and what kind of job are you looking for after you graduate? And what are your salary prospects in comparison to the amount of debt load you think you'll be carrying?
Well, my majors are dance and women's studies, neither of which yield large amounts of money, but are incredibly, incredibly enriching to me. Like that, I'm just so passionate about dance and so passionate about studying issues for women, especially in dance, because dance is a highly female field. I'm going to be graduating with almost $20,000 worth of debt, and I don't know what my prospects for earning power are. Professional dancers, when they can get paid per performance, and it probably when you look at it in terms of dollars per hour, in terms of how many hours are spent in rehearsal and all of that sort of thing, it's probably below the minimum wage for most dancers, professional dancers. And I'm not planning on going on to be a university teacher or anything like that anytime soon. So, I think I'll probably be waiting tables.
Mr. Chairman, I hope that, there are other things out there for women's studies majors, I suppose, than waiting tables and some other interesting professions, but maybe we'll get a chance to see you at either the Southern Theater or at the New Schubert someday when they get that set up as a dance center.
I would love to perform at the Southern Theater.
Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How much is the tuition and room and board and books? In other words, you said you had a debt load of about $20,000. How does that compare to what the annual cost of attending with your normal credit load, what would that be?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cox, trying to think of, I think that probably per year I pay about $6,000 in terms of tuition, and then I think there are fees on top of that, and then, of course, room and board. I haven't worked it all out, so I'm not even sure that I could answer that. I think that that my total cost of attendance will be somewhere between $40,000 and $50,000. So about $15,000 or maybe $17,000 of that was paid for by savings that my parents very thankfully saved up during my years growing up. And the rest of that came from scholarships and Pell Grants. But the Pell Grants aren't large enough to cover that. And it's only because my father makes a little money that I was able to qualify for Pell Grants.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have two other folks from the University of Minnesota. One, Dan Miller and Drew Sandquist, if I'm saying that right. Maybe they both could come up together and we could... I think she was the third. Colin Lenson? Okay. Welcome to the committee. Why don't you state your name record?
Thank you for the invitation. My name is Andrew Sandquist. I'm a student at the University of Minnesota Duluth campus. I am currently a senior this year with a political science and philosophy double major. Hoping to attend graduate school sometime here in the fall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Colin Swenson. I'm a student senator in the College of Biological Sciences at the university. I'm a microbiology major and a political science minor. I hope to go on to the School of Public Health and study epidemiology. That's my career goal.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dan Miller. I'm a graduate student at the Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs, master's in public policy.
Very good. Whoever would like to start?
I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to come down from Duluth today. Been watching the weather. I'm very lucky to be down here today, not up there. Yeah. 45 degrees and sunny yesterday morning, and by the afternoon it was about 10 degrees and foggy. I don't know how that happens, but that's Duluth for you. Because I am a student at Duluth, I have some fairly unique concerns about the coming budget cycle. First and foremost on the minds of UMD students is the recreational sports center in the bonding bill that's currently making its way through the process. This is unquestionably the number one priority for UMD students, without a doubt, hands down, ask anyone. There's unprecedented student support for this via petitions, via voting, via everything you can think of. And there's been a student contribution so far planned of nearly $4 million, which is a third of this facility. The students want this. The students need this. We have a poor facility now and extremely high enrollment. We went from approximately 6,000 students 8 years ago to over 10,000 now. And our current facilities just cannot stand it anymore. We're proud of our reputation as a national leader in activity, in recreational sports, in outdoor programs, and we'd like to keep that up. The other issue I'd like to speak on today is I'd like to speak against the high tuition, high aid model, which many have proposed as a solution to the budget crisis we're having. The university as a whole would be of a lesser quality if you had this unpredictable funding source. It would allow, it's bad for the infrastructure of the university. The levels of funding can change rapidly from one year to another. It prevents students of a lower class from attending. The sticker shock of saying tuition's what, $20,000 a year, will discourage a lot of people from even looking into it. A lot of people see that now and say, okay, tuition's reasonable now. I can pay, $6,000 per semester, per year, and, that's affordable. That's something, it's a goal you see. It's tangible. $20,000 would discourage that when you get up there in this high tuition. And there's no guarantee then that that aid will be there. There's no guarantee that in the next budget cycle we're in just as bad a position and the aid's the first thing to go. Then you have extremely high tuition and limited aid. And we have a serious problem in that aspect. Even if there was aid available, it would be in the form of what? Loans and work study, increasing the debt load for students that are there now. The number one absolute best form of student aid is lower tuition. It's a reasonable tuition that students can afford. I guess the bottom line that I would like to present to you is you have to ask yourself, do you believe that the university is a public good or not? Is it a public service or are we just another college? Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi.
And if you'd introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Colin Swenson. I came today to speak mostly about the biological sciences and that aspect at the university. And doing some research on the CBS website last night, I was just astounded by the number of research efforts that are going on at the university now currently. Specifically, there's an initiative on renewable energy and the environment, which the legislature funded $20 million recently. And this was an effort to focus on using biomass, wind, solar energy, and hydrogen power to improve not only the state's economy, but also this nation's. We need one of the main goals is energy sustainability and independence. And the university is working directly to have an impact on those goals. But from a student's perspective, you know, also looking, there's about 40 other smaller programs that are going on as kind of under the umbrella of this major initiative. A lot of these programs have to do with specifically with hydrogen fuel cells developing better technology to harness biomass, ethanol, things of that nature. And undergraduates actually play a role in that. There are a lot of them are assistants in laboratories and so on and so forth. And they're unique opportunities given to the students at the University of Minnesota to really gain experience that is going to help the state and the nation. So what I'm speaking to is kind of the investment into the university, I think, is essential because you all heard of it's the economic engine of the state, and I could go on and on about that. But I really don't think it can be overstated. I think it serves an incredibly important role, both as an institution of higher learning for undergraduates, but also as a research institution. We're one of the top-ranked research universities in the nation, and I'd love to keep it that way. We have outstanding faculty. We have faculty that publish in the top scientific journals, including Science and Nature. It's really an accomplishment. And also an interesting fact, of the 9,229 living alumni that graduated from College of Biological Sciences, 4,953 still live in Minnesota. That's over 50% retention. These people are staying in Minnesota, contributing to the economy, and I think that it would behoove the state enormously to continue to adequately fund the university and continue to provide these opportunities for both undergraduates and for faculty to do the research that's needed. And that's why I encourage you to support not only the governor's proposal that he has, but even above and above beyond that. That would really, that's our hope. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would also, my name is Dan Miller, and I attend the Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs. I would just like to say thank you again on behalf of all of us for taking the time to listen to us. I think we know how busy you are, and we really do appreciate being able to be heard. So I just wanted to open by saying thank you. There's a couple of points I wanted to touch on. We've gone over most of the things, but one thing I just wanted to hit on was the fact that I really believe, just in my experience, that the current lack of funding to the university has resulted in real cuts and real programs being lost. I know there's talk about medical technology and occupational therapy on the chopping block, and I know in my experience just at the Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs, seeing the Agriculture Extension Service, how much that has been drawn down has been, I guess, a disappointment in the sense that I work in economic development. One of the things that we talk about all the time is the value the extension services have had in fostering growth all throughout greater Minnesota. And seeing that program dwindle away, obviously, is a disappointment, and I'm sure you hear from your constituents on that topic as well. The second thing I just wanted to say is that it's just, in my personal experience, it is pretty lean at the University of Minnesota right now. I know there is a lot of talk about how the university has a lot of waste they can cut or some fat they can cut, and I can tell you in my experience at the Humphrey Institute is it's pretty lean right now. Simple examples is, we have a Master's in Science and Technology and Energy Policy program, which is barely in existence at this point. I think we have one or two faculty in the program, and we're having trouble recruiting students because basically when you're looking at competing programs, you've got a full set of faculty and a full institution dedicated to that, whereas at the Humphrey Institute, it's basically on its way out. And so I do know that, I just want you to know that this, it is lean, and at least in some departments at the University of Minnesota. It's not there isn't plenty of money to go around, and that does concern me. I mean, a simple example is in our student lounge, there's a couple couches that look like they've been there since 1965, and we can't, and I mean, tattered and falling apart, and we can't even find the money to buy a couple extra couches. We're taking money from our student organization budget to get those. So I just wanted to pass that point along. The final point I would make is that we do realize that you have difficult decisions to make, and you have a lot of priorities to be dealt with, and a lot of people asking you to tearing you in different directions and asking for funding in different areas. But I think the point we all want to make is that we feel that this is a top investment, a top priority, that you get more value, more long-run value by making investments in the University of Minnesota and in the various programs and the students that they serve than any other investment in the state. And we really all feel strongly that on that point. And I think that's evidenced by the fact that we've got a variety of students here come from Duluth and from their jobs and taking time out of their day to come out. And I know that in my experience that student representation at the Capitol is not that common. So I hope you do appreciate the fact that it is kind of do or die time for us right now. And we do feel it's important. So thank you for your time. And I think we'll take any questions.
Well, thank you very much. Are there any questions for these three gentlemen? Very good. Well, thank you. Oh, Representative Mariani.
Sure, I'll ask a question. Thank you for being here. I appreciate the time, the effort, and the testimony. I just want to gauge your sense of this message in your communities and out beyond these walls. I mean, obviously, it's an important message to hear here, and this is where a lot of the decisions will be made, but those decisions won't be made those decisions will be made in large part depending on what we hear from our own constituents, direct constituents. So I think you're from different parts of the state and originally, and so I'm just, you know, it's kind of an open-ended question in terms of, you know, do you and your colleagues, are you spending time communicating with, you know, in your own communities, families, other networks? And what are you hearing back from people on this? Do people generally care about this issue? Are people willing to look at, for instance, additional taxes to make it possible for us not to have tuition increases? Just kind of just your sense of what you're hearing out there.
Go ahead first, if you like. Speaking from Duluth, relations between UMD and its neighborhoods and its neighbors has been shaky in the past, and we're working on resolving that. Programs such as, we have one called Better Neighbors that actively goes out and talks to people, and I think it's brought a lot of positive public relations image to the campus up there. So I think, yes, there are definitely people in Duluth who are in favor of funding university projects. Anything that brings money to an economy, for instance, up there is absolutely a positive, especially in the Iron Range area up in Duluth for the North Shore. So that's the area I can speak to. So does that answer your question?
Any other comments?
We also have sure, yeah. I'm from Minneapolis. I went to school in Minneapolis public school system. I think the university provides an incredible opportunity for low-income students and students that might not have gone to college otherwise to go forth and do so. I have a number of friends that have had to drop out because tuition has gotten too exceedingly high, and they can't afford it any longer. Now, the feeling from my family in my neighborhood is that my parents have a sign in their yard that says they're willing to pay for Better Minnesota. And that's the feeling in my neighborhood, at least, that, you know, they realize that the university provides incredible opportunity for the students, the children of Minnesota, and that it really is something worth investing in. Education is paramount paramount importance in my family, at least, and the people I know. So, I think it definitely, you know, at least constituents where I'm from are very concerned about the rising cost of tuition and the impact it's going to have on the state.
Yeah, just to add on to that, I live around the University of Minnesota, so obviously there's a huge amount of support for the university. But Not only that, we've had district meetings where we just get people together throughout the state in certain areas to talk about what their feelings are in the university and if they're supportive. And we've been amazed at the amount of turnout we've had, and people do understand that university is a really valuable asset, especially when you talk about, when you connect it to their lives in terms of, you know, the agricultural extension services or just crop research, things like that, that may not get in their minds right away. But so I've been amazed at the amount of support there is for it.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The gentleman, the father of three sons who graduated from college, and I'm still helping to pay for a better Minnesota. Yeah. The young lady who testified earlier said that her debt load would be about $20,000. I was wondering if that is, you know, typical, if you're, you know, higher or lower, and so what do you project your debt load to be when you graduate?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, mine will be around 20 as well. I believe the average is in the 40s, or 48, but I have to check on that. Somebody, is that? I think that's what it is, but don't quote me.
We can have.
Yes? That's a yes. Okay.
Actually, I've made the decision not to live on campus. That saved me a significant amount of money. And I've worked since I was 14 years old to try to pay for the rising cost of tuition. So right now, I don't have any debt load to speak of, but that's because I haven't had a car either. So I haven't had to pay insurance, and I've made a lot of sacrifices in my life. But when I go to grad school, that's a completely different story. And it's going to be astronomical, the numbers that I'm going to be looking at for graduate school. But it's $12,000 a year, I think, for a student to live on campus and pay room and board and pay 13 credits, I think, is what it is. Yeah, $13,000. So it's getting up there. I mean, it's more than Wisconsin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, my personal debt load, I'm looking at about $15,000 to $17,000 in debt load right now. That's only because I've been able to come up with out-of-pocket expenses of about $1,500 per semester. That's a check written to the University of Minnesota. Money I'd rather have back, but I mean, that's a sacrifice I'm willing to make for my education. University of Minnesota is a great name. It has a great reputation throughout the state, throughout the nation, and that's a partnership that I'm willing to engage in. So, thank you.
Representative Carlson, you had a question?
Mr. Chairman, a related question, and if you touched on this, I apologize, because I was going back and forth with the Ways and Means Committee, as several of us are here. Did you happen to comment on the amount of work time you put in during the school year? Number of hours per week? Typically,
do you want to respond?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I am a teaching assistant. I work 20 hours a week.
I am currently employed at a grocery store, and I have been for the last 5 years, and I put in at least 16 hours a week.
I work as a technical support guy, phone internet tech support. I do about 20 hours a week phone tech support, plus an internship.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason I raised that question, I remember a number of years ago we had a report that if students, if I recall correctly, put in more than 20 hours per week, it begins to impact on their timely completion and grades, and, you know, there's several side issues. And it sounds like none of you're all working, but don't fall into that category where it might cross over and be somewhat detrimental.
Mr. Chair, my name is Emily Seraphy Cox. I presented earlier, and I'm a security monitor at the dance building. I tutor, and I also work for a labor union, and I put in about 20 hours a week. And I would say that while it probably doesn't affect my grades or my time of completion, it affects the quality of the education that I come out of there with. The the amount of connections that I've made in my head about how to do stuff in the world and be a good person.
Actually, I beg to differ. I think it has impacted my academic career, actually, because I'm taking courses that require, you're talking about 8 to 10 hours of studying per class, in some instances, you know, biochemistry, organic chemistry, genetics, things of that nature, that I think it has had an impact on my education, you know, not being able to have weekends to spend reading my textbooks and staying up till hours of the night. I think it has had an impact on me personally. So,
thank you. Thank you, Representative Eastland.
I have a maybe an observation or a comment. It could turn into a question if you guys want to answer it. But I'm not questioning your ability to manage money. But I also have three children who have all graduated from college, and I pretty vividly remember the last semester that my son was in college. He came home with a loan request, his last loan request that was going to get him through the year, and it was a loan request for $10,000 that was going to pay his final tuition payment and get him through the year. And when we sat down and had him actually put together a budget, it turned out that he needed about $3,000 to pay his tuition. The other seven was going to pay a car payment, was going to do a bunch of other things they were quality of life issues that he was choosing and kind of using his student loan capacity to be able to buy them. I guess my question is, how much of that is involved in generating these high loans that people end up coming out of college with?
If we could just maybe one person respond to that, we're going to have to move along. We've got in addition to other students, we also have a bill that we want to
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, I think there, with some students, there are clearly problems with money management. I think it would be dishonest to say that. But I know in my own experience, I'm living basically off minimum wage, I guess is the way I'd put that. That's what my annual salary is, just for living expenses and things of that nature. So, you know, I think that's And I think that's how most students are, where they're about at. So.
Okay, well, thank you very much for coming today. We all appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much,
and good luck with your careers. Next, we have students representing the Minnesota Private College Council, Amy Sturdivant and Tim McDonald, I have on my list. Is that... Welcome to the committee. And if you could just introduce yourself for the record.
Okay. My name is Amy Sturdivant, and I am president of the Minnesota Association of Private College Students. Thank you for having us here at the Higher Education Finance Division Committee. I'm here to speak to you about the state grant program. As I said, I'm a private college student. My peers and I have a unique perspective on government-based financial aid because of the fact that our students are ineligible for most of the money from the state. There is one significant program or form of aid that we can receive, though, and that is the state grant program. Students who are determined qualified for need-based financial aid receive a grant from the state and are able to apply that money to any institution they choose. This is the most important aspect of the state grant program. It allows students to choose a college that fits their needs, not just their pocketbook. My situation is a perfect example of this. At the end of my sophomore year of high school, my father lost his job due to the bad economy and was unable to find another for about 2 years. Our family was left with no income whatsoever, as he was the sole worker. My mother was a stay-at-home mother for me and my sister. So tapping into savings and loans became a requirement for us. By the time of my senior year of high school, college was looking like an impossible option for me. St. Thomas was my first choice of schools. Because of their excellent political science and communications programs, the areas I'm majoring in, and also for the small class sizes and other attributes as well. I got my acceptance letter from them, but it was looking very grim financially. Then the financial aid report came in the mail.
Through a grouping of grants and scholarships, I was able to afford to attend St. Thomas. One of these, the most significant one, was the state grant. I am incredibly grateful for this grant because without it, I would not be at the university that fits my learning and living style so well. There are countless stories that are similar to mine, and many more who are even worse for wear. As you know, the state grant program is about 10% of the higher education budget, and some of the students who receive these grants do choose to attend public colleges as well. In fact, only about 3% of your total higher education budget goes to private colleges, college students in the form of state grants. That 3% makes an enormous impact on the lives of private college students, and they are able to achieve so much with it. 1 out of 4 of our students are state grant recipients, and their awards average about $3,100. This money makes a significant dent in their financial obligation, and due to that, they will be able to contribute economically to our state in the future. Our private colleges are an asset in the state of Minnesota because of the sheer volume of education they provide. As I said earlier, only about 3% of the state's education money goes to private college students. But private colleges graduate over 1/3 of all of Minnesota's baccalaureate recipients each year. 1/3 of the baccalaureate recipients with 3% of the state's money. That is an amazing return on the investment of the state. And the degrees awarded are those that will fortify Minnesota's economy greatly. Private colleges award 44% of health profession degrees, 43% of all math degrees, 42% of all science degrees, and 37% of all business degrees. Having grant money available to private college students is not a wasted use of the state money. It helps fuel Minnesota's economy with educated workers for only about 3% of the money of higher education. The Private College Council has recommended an increase of $45 million in funding of the state grant program and revising eligibility. We strongly support this. If more students are able to attend private colleges on a state grant, then the state will save money. Each year, the state saves about $5,500 per student that decides to attend a private college because private institutions do not receive subsidies. The state grant program allows for students to choose where they want to go based on what fits them best, not what fits their wallet. Private colleges are the best fit for some. For others, the public college is better. But whatever the student chooses, the state grant program allows them to have that choice. Minnesota has one of the best financial aid systems in the nation. We are a state that allows for access to education, no matter the means. We encourage your continuing support of a program that defined us as such.
Thank you, Mr. Durant. Why don't we hear from Mr. McDonald? We can see if there are any questions from the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Tim McDonald. I'm president-elect of the Association of Private College Students. I'm a student at Hamline. I major in political science and education. I'd like to echo some of Amy's points as well as contribute some observations and views of my own. I'll speak to the unique institutional fit our colleges have with students, and I'll express our support for expanding the eligibility requirements for students who receive state grants. First, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I'm from Wisconsin, a town of 15,000, about 3 miles east of Madison. I wanted to come to a private school because I wanted to get the small community atmosphere that it would provide. I wanted to come to a big city too, so that was part of the appeal of Minnesota. The private college system has an abundance of schools both in greater Minnesota and the metro area, so that really drew me out of Wisconsin. I had to fight my parents quite a bit to come because the tuition is so high. Parents, guidance counselor, friends, they're all pretty against it. Even my grandma, I remember at the end of the summer, before I came to college, she sat me down and she's like, Timmy, you're going to give your mom a heart attack. And I was like, why is that? And she's like, you got your heart set on this school, and you it's twice what your sister's paying. But I was like, you know what, there's something there that's going to fit me in a way that you just can't put numbers on. And within the first 2 weeks of being at Hamline, it lived up to all my expectations and beyond, which leads me to the institutional fit of our colleges for students. It's very unique, the experience students get at our schools, because there's a very strong sense of community between professors, students, student organizations, even the administration. The presidents of the college, they'll eat lunch with you often. Some students would probably go crazy in this environment. Some students absolutely thrive in this environment because the personal attention they get from people in authority, they can work with them, collaborate with them, and they just absolutely excel. And like at Hamline specifically, we have 2/3 of our student body who is in student organizations. 1/3 is in athletics. And when they're involved in these student organizations, they're involved in the administration of them, the budgeting of them. The student government's budget's about $300,000. People involved in the student government put in 20 hours a week just within the student government, going through committees, going through meetings, budget processes. A lot of the learning for students, if they engage in this community, takes place out of the classroom. There's the traditional classroom, but then there's a really special out-of-classroom, hands-on experience that you can really only get on a campus that has 2,000 people, where the advisors are there until 8 o'clock at night working with you, working with different groups. And the student-professor cooperation in the classroom, too, is something really special. Last semester alone, I would meet with three of my professors daily. Oftentimes, they invite classes to come over, have dinner at their house, do stuff. It's really a unique opportunity students get. We believe that the eligibility requirements need to be expanded for the state grant, because there's a demographic of students that fall outside of this. I'm from Wisconsin, but if I were in Minnesota, I would probably fall outside the requirements of receiving the state grant. However, I'm still in great financial need. We, as a group of private colleges, support the notion that the state really needs to help its students, its Minnesota citizens, the students that have grown up here, attend the college that is going to fit them best, regardless of if it's state or private. And I really push that, because there's a lot of our students that are excelling at our schools because of the unique opportunities we offer that maybe would not do so well at other institutions. And there's some people that would probably go crazy at a campus of small schools too. Some of the people who testified before were talking about the need to work during the week, during the school week, during the weekend, to afford the education. Our students are paying upwards of $20,000 a year in tuition alone often. It's not uncommon at all for our students to be working 40 hours a week. And where that really gets... where that really affects their education is that starts taking away from their ability to be involved outside of the classroom, to really maximize what our schools can offer. They're barely keeping up with schoolwork, let alone joining clubs, doing sports. Student athletes, the demographics of our athletics programs goes freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, because people are so far in debt they have to work 40 hours a week. They just keep taking out more loans. So the answer many students find for rising tuition and financial aid that doesn't keep up with the loans or with the tuition hikes is to keep taking loans. And the debt they accumulate is so great that it can close doors for graduate school before they're even open, really. And at the very least, it just absolutely straps down students to debt. For example, a middle-class student in the education program at Hamlin could very easily come out of their undergrad with loans totaling twice what St. Paul Public Schools pays for beginning salary. And I mean, it makes it difficult for, I'm an education major, and it makes it very difficult for my classmates and I to stay in the education program because we can't pay off these loans. St. Kate's has an incredible nursing program. A lot of those students are, they're feeling the same dilemma, is how can I stay at this school if my loans are going to be so high I can't pay them off? But they benefit so much from the school that they would hate to leave because it'd be a personal tragedy of sorts, almost. I'd just like to stress what Amy said, that our institutions award one-third of all baccalaureate degrees, including 44% of mathematics and 41% of the biological and physical science degrees. That's almost half of the math and science baccalaureate degrees, with one-third of the total higher education funding. And two-thirds of our students are Minnesota residents. They grew up in Minnesota. They chose to go to school in Minnesota. They're going to stay here at a rate of 75% approximately once they graduate. So they're still going to be feeding into the economy. So we believe it's in the best interest of the state that every student can attend the college that fits him or her best. I'll give two quick examples before I wrap this up. My roommate is a lineman for Hamlin's football team. He made all-conference as a sophomore this year. He's the captain of the team. His dad's a delivery man. His mom works for Carpet King. I asked him last night, I was like, Ricky, do you receive a state grant? And he starts laughing. He's like, I just went over my financial aid package with my dad last night, and he would not be here if it weren't for the state grant of about $4,000. And he's a perfect example of someone who came to school, and instead of just going to college, he's immersed himself in the campus community through athletics, through student government, through student organizations, and he is just excelling at this school. But he couldn't be here if it weren't for the state grant. And I have another friend who has a single mother who is a special education teacher for St. Paul Public Schools. She has a very tough time affording school, but she gets a state grant, and it helps out immensely. Both of these students are from Minnesota. They're going to stay here and teach in the metro area public school system when they graduate, too. So they're going to be contributing to Minnesota's economy and our society. I'd just like to reiterate, one-fourth of our students receive a state grant for an average of $3,000. They can receive them as high as seven. However, it's a very rare occasion, and that's just in the greatest instance of financial need. The average is $3,000. I believe we can do better because these are Minnesota students. They've grown up here. They've chosen to stay here for college, and they'll most likely stay here after graduation, too. Members, I thank you for listening to us. I'll take any questions if you have
any. Any questions for the stars? Very good. Well, thank you very much for coming. Appreciate your interest and willingness to share your thoughts and concerns with us. Next, according to our agenda, Representative Abler. We have a bill. House File 670. Representative Abler, I'm assuming that this is for possible inclusion.
We're going to vote it out here today, Mr. Chair, but I'm willing to have it held for possible inclusion. I'm going to wait a little while to think about it, but I'll move it for possible inclusion.
Let's at least hold it until the chair comes back.
Surprise him.
That would surprise him, no doubt.
Ways and Means. Describe it. Sure, he is in Ways and Means right now, so we can
send it right down
there. Right down there. I'll move it for possible inclusion. Just to be brief, this is a funded tuition freeze. And Mr. Chair and members, you've heard plenty of testimony, and there's more testimony to come about some of the challenges that students are facing as they attempt to finish their education. And it's a burden, and in some cases it's a burden that they can no longer handle. I think you can argue that students should bear part of the cost, and I think for testimony that they do indeed bear part of that work, 40 hours a week, which I think is a little much. But I worked all the way through college, and I managed my debt load myself, and costs have gone quite a bit since then, and I had a substantial debt even at that point. But I think the impact varies quite a bit depending upon the group you're looking at. And that's what kind of compelled me to bring this forward. And I know it's a lot of money, and I don't, you know, have to see where the priorities all lie, where it actually gets funded at. But I wanted the students to get a chance to talk about what was on their mind, the challenges they faced, and especially I wanted to point out, and I'll make one of the ones, areas where some students are actually not getting a chance to get through for any number of reasons. And in particular, just to call brief attention to a couple of groups, the students of color. They have a hard time, it seems like they have a hard time getting through the K-12 system to graduate for any number of reasons, and there are compelling reasons why they may not. Mobility, language issues, familial issues, just all kinds of issues. But they, as a group, are, the students of color do not do well getting through high school, something in the range of 50% or 55%. We heard testimony about that maybe a month ago. And with this much more modest group of people now that have graduated to that ethnicity, there's a small group to try to get through college, and they even do less while getting through to the end. And part of that, I think, is economic, and there's other reasons as well, but I think that if we can find a way to reduce the barriers, that group in particular, that we'll see some real benefits in terms of the raising the whole, keeping Minnesota strong and keeping the blend of all the different abilities that are there to be had. So, in terms of the demographic impact, if you read any of the demographic reports, you'll discover that there aren't enough people to go around take care of us, which is really why I'm here. And then you all, there's a, and to pay Social Security and to do all that. It's really just a selfish bill, Mr. Chair. but so as we age and there's our, just every chart, there's, we're short of doctors, lawyers, let's find up lawyers, but there's plumbers and, sorry, Mr. Chair, just a cheap shot.
I'm not a lawyer.
Okay, good. And, no wonder I like you so well.
maybe others are a real good.
Mr. Chair, sounds like libel.
Mr. Chair, he would know.
back to anyway, the topic.
Happy not voting today, Mr. Chair. Anyway, but as we look at the demographic studies, we're short of people in all categories for all the jobs there are. And Minnesota would assert that it would be a high-tech state with highly trained people, and our tradition is to be a place to draw businesses to come here for who we, the likes of us, so many, most of us have been to college, and those of us who have the skills that companies need to come and be a competitor in the world marketplace. And a strong, the reason we're on this committee, and it's the choir here, that we believe in a strong higher ed system, and so everybody who wants to have a chance can get there. And that's the essence of this, and whether it be a minority group or people who have tremendous skills that just for other reasons would have a hard time getting through for their economic disadvantages and whatnot. In the several years gone by, there's been substantial increases, and so for some people it is becoming a critical mass. And so that's my thoughts, and I bring it respectfully to you for consideration as the whole budgeting process goes forward, and I'll stand for questions.
Representative Ehlert, the bill is more than just the freeze. There's some language that speaks to how that gets funded. Could you just clarify that for us to make sure we understand the details, because you filled some gap anyway of what, instead of some level of a tuition increase, there's a larger state appropriation than, say, the governor's bill. So I just, if you could just help us make sure we understand that part.
So this is just for the Minsky system only. The bill says that if the Minsky's proposal, if their request for funding is funded, they declare that there'll be a 4% tuition increase if that goes forward, which they thought was modest. This would backfill the 4%, and so it would continue on in the out years.
How much is that? What's that amount? You know,
$20 million the first year and 40 after that.
42.
There's a fiscal note there.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I don't know.
It is not a small sum of money, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cox, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ehlert, you know, this intrigued me, and I signed on with the bill. I think this is something that is an issue that has come to the forefront really in the last few years, and the cost of school. But you know, as I was listening to the different students testify here, I started hearing, you know, cost benefit talk. Should you invest heavily in a dance major and hope you can get a job, and hope if you can't, you have some other training from the university that you can fall back on. I heard a number of things about personal financial choices. One of the gentlemen that testified indicated he'd been working since he was 14, saving money, putting ahead to that. Others didn't have a car. Other students decide to have a car when they're in high school and pay for that and so forth. And how do you, in the bill as introduced, there's no tie between that. Should there be? I guess that's what I'm asking you. Do you think we need to address this at this level, or do any ties tie back to what the students are doing in preparation for school?
Representative Adler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Cox. It's a good question. The bill is not here at all. It's simply just a blanket way. Freezes all the tuition for all the students. I think there, if the bill actually gets that far, we can talk about this thing and be happy to entertain that notion. I think you'll find it's as difficult as the whole HESO funding thing goes on, and who should get the money and who shouldn't, and if are we going to reward ants or grasshoppers, as it were, and not that a dance major is something that's not something you want to fund, because I think everybody has a reason to go to get their training as they will. Is it, the question I would ask is, how responsible has the person been with what's been given to them, and how have they done with that? That's the question, not maybe less than in terms of, I think if you go down the road of eliminating certain majors, some other ones, unless there's some targeted majors that we really don't have enough of, you want to draw more of those in, there may be somewhere to go with that to encourage more. But I think that, you know, the needs analysis, I think you could spend a whole meeting talking about how do we reward some people that have different levels of economic needs, or and there's, you know, different levels of responsibility. So that's something to talk about in the future, I think.
Representative Cox.
Yeah, and I guess I would hope that we could, because it is as the, I tell you what I hate to see is students coming out with $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 worth of debt with no plan on either job prospects or what they're going to do. When I have free time on the weekend, I like to build birdhouses. I'm not going to try to earn my living doing that, though, all by myself in a little shop. And I guess I just think that somehow it would be good to get a link between this and overall planning, starting at a younger age, and you know, whether it's 14, 15 years old, like the gentleman that talked to us, or, you know, at some point, so that there's a plan in place and a backup plan. So that's all.
And we have Representative Pawlowski, Latz, and then Erdahl. So, you know.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I've got two questions. The first question is to clarify this funding. When you said Minsky's request, this is above Minsky's request. Is it above the 130 for enrollment recognition, or is it above the 130 and the $66 million that they asked for improvement? Can you clarify where that is?
Representative Abel.
And I have one more question.
Yeah, I could guess that. All
right. Yeah, this bill would, I'm sorry, my name is, Mr. Chair, my name is Brad Craswell. I'm the state chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association. We've been assisting Representative Abel within this bill. The bill would fund the enrollment increase, the Minsky initiatives, and the tuition assumption or inflation, depending on how you define it, in order to freeze tuition for 2 years.
Right.
It would be a fully funded tuition freeze.
Representative Pawlowski. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This isn't directed at Representative Abler, but it may be directed at the students. We've heard from the University of Minnesota. We're about to hear from at least one part of the Minsky system. And I think to clarify, when the students are talking about double-digit increases in tuition from 2003, 2004 to the present, I think we should clarify that a great deal of that is predicated on the 2003 budget cuts to the University of Minnesota into the Minsky system, where we took hundreds of millions from both systems to balance the budget, that the students then picked up that amount of money and paid for it themselves, for which they did not get an expansion of class, any significant improvement on their campuses. They simply wrote out a check to balance the budget. And I think when the students are a little modest when they tell us about the number of jobs they have and the number of credits that they're carrying and the weight that they're carrying, and for the private colleges, we would dearly have loved to have expanded the grant program too. But unfortunately, we were shutting it down that year because we ran out of money. So I think when we're looking at a bill for a tuition freeze, we let the students carry the a significant part of the budget reduction in 03, 04, and now in 05. And I think it's time that we took at least that burden off their backs.
Representative Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I echo what Representative Pulaski has said, so I won't repeat it. But I also wanted to respond in particular to Representative Cox's comments. Not everyone at age 14 knows they're going to go to college. In fact, I'd venture to say quite a few don't. I mean, I knew at age 14 I was going to go to law school. But most of my colleagues, I would say, sort of had some idea that they were going to head off maybe post-secondary. But I don't think we should hold that as the standard unless we want to turn this into a European system and start screening 14-year-olds for aptitude for college, and say the 20% who have a certain level of aptitude will be going on to college, and the rest of them can go somewhere else. They're much more selective in that way in Europe. And we've built a great country on the opposite premise, that everyone who has the ability and the desire will have access to higher education. And I think that ought to be the premise for making funding decisions. In terms of whether or not they have a car, I think we've got to be, or the more general question, how financially responsible are they while they are in college? I think that's a fair question, but we again have to be very careful because different people have different needs. Some people have cars because they have jobs that they need to get to, or they have cars because they have internships that they need to get to. And especially when you get outside of the metro area, when there isn't a great transportation system alternative to the cars, that can be their only way to get some of the career options to build up the resume for some good jobs down the road. So I don't think I would draw the line there, and certainly trying to make statewide policy on the basis of individuals who have particular need for one car or another car or form of transportation or how old should it be or what's the gas mileage going to be, I think that is really micromanaging. The only other comment I wanted to make is would echo Representative Abler's response on the issue of selecting majors for funding or not for funding. My gosh, if we get into setting state policy on which majors are appropriate and which majors aren't appropriate, not only are we going to spend the entire session debating the merits of one major or another, but we are really going to end up shortchanging Minnesota and Minnesotans. There's a debate raging right now in national circles about the direction of higher education and whether higher education should be focused on an economic productivity model, essentially turning all colleges and universities into vocational systems directed toward creating higher productivity workers for jobs, or whether there's something more than just the worker bees that are being produced by higher education, whether there's some value like it was viewed in the late 19th century to higher education, just for the value of creating a civil, civic-minded, just and fair community that we all live in. If you look specifically at some of these pursuits, which may not have an immediate and direct financial return for graduates, but which contribute overall you might even say that about poli-sci majors, for that matter. Unless you go on to law school or get a PhD and teach in poli-sci, one of the greatest values is having an understanding of how government works and how community works and how decisions get made in a democracy. And if we tell poli-sci majors that they're only going to be allowed to go on to law school or they're not going to get funded, I think we end up shortchanging our democracy. Dance majors, even if you don't go to dance, are part of the artistic fabric of the community, as are all music majors. And frankly, if you look at Minnesota, if you want to tie it back to economics, we are recognized as having one of the greatest densities of the creative class in the United States. And the creative class is a big part of what is driving the attraction of this metropolitan area, and the economic engine for people who want to come to live in Minnesota. So all of these majors, the whole range of endeavors, contribute to the value of our community. And I would hope that we really never even get into any further discussion on which majors should get funded or shouldn't get funded, except when we're trying to expand the nursing program, which we've had lots of discussions about before, or as Representative Abler suggested, targeting certain areas where there are shortages or where we really have specific needs that need to be filled.
Mr. Chair, I have to go to vote in ways. And then there's witnesses can carry on.
Representative Abler. Sure. Will you be back?
I don't. Depends if we get done voting.
Mr. Chair, I'm second author. I can pick.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, very good. To this point, Representative Cox, is that what you...
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Blatt, eventually your children will grow up and you will send them off to college. And I look forward to that day, and I'm sure you do too. And they might know that they're going to go to college when they're 14, as you said you did in law school. And I think that's great. And I think that it's also very important to remember that in the United States, with our freedoms, allows us to be just as successful as we can and allows us all to fail if we also have that. I think what I was talking about is I think we need to look at choices, whether it's individual choices or choices that we put in law and policies that we put in law. But I think everybody has the choice to make, and what I was talking to Representative Abler about was cost benefit ratios and so forth. If you don't think and you have the means to be able to do this, that you feel that a particular major or course of study is going to pay back to you, to as simple as that, you know, you might want to evaluate that. You may make that decision that it doesn't matter. You're gonna do this anyway. But I think that it's a thing that the society as a whole has to juggle with. You're absolutely right in that we don't want to necessarily create a system where you take an arbiter test or whatever at when you're 14 years old, and then everything is sort of locked into place from there on down the line. We haven't operated that way, and I don't think we will. But I do think it's very important to let everybody be aware of what the choices and options are out there, and we can do that in our K-12 if we work harder on making students aware of what the options are and work with them on it. So I guess I would just say that.
Very good. Representative Urdahl, even with the absence of Representative Abler, you still have...
I can still do it.
Go ahead. And we have the students from the MinSCU or State College and the State University Student Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be real brief. First of all, I'm just glad that St. Cloud State had some good advisors when I was trying to decide if I wanted to be a dance major or social studies.
The market would have taken care of it.
That's right. But Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski kind of got to do the question I had, so I'll just make a brief comment. I would encourage us to invest the utmost of our ability into our educational systems, be it, you know, K-12 or higher education in this case, and particularly to reward those working students who are trying to help themselves by going through education in whatever way that we can.
So are there some specific testimony you'd like to share with respect to Representative Abler's bill?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. My name is, again, Brad Crassway, and I'm the state chair of the Minnesota State University Students Association. I'm a student down at Winona State University. My major was psychology. My minor was political science. I'm currently a grad student and I'm going for my counseling education master's degree in school counseling. And I want to thank Mr. Chair Opatz and members of the committee for allowing me and all of us to be up here today. I would first especially like to thank those of you that have co-authored onto our tuition freeze bill. But I would especially like to thank, even though he's not here, our chief author, Jim Abler, for serving as the chief author and answering a call of more than 170,000 students within the Minsky system in dire need of support, in dire need of a tuition freeze. Tuition at our state colleges and universities has increased almost 60% in the last 4 years. With cost increasings at such a fast rate, it's becoming very difficult for many of our students to pursue a college education, which absolutely will not benefit the state in the long run. Today's students and are tomorrow's nurses, teachers, police officers, business owners, leaders, and taxpayers, and students are working hard to make a better life for themselves and make a better state out of Minnesota in the process. But make no mistake about it, when a student goes to college, they expect to pay something for their education. And in fact, some people would argue that paying for college gives a student a true sense of ownership in their educational investment. But gone are the days when you are able to work your way through college. More and more students are working full-time jobs, taking out loans to pay tuition, and unfortunately some are dropping out of school or never even entering the doors of higher education because they feel that they cannot afford it. At Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, there is no longer a question of do you have loans, but instead the question is how much in loans do you have? In 2002, students in Minnesota State Colleges and Universities took out $317 million in loans, and in 2004, they borrowed just more than $400 million, an increase of over 20% in just 2 years. When you go to a Minsky campus, the education you receive is supposed to give you an advantage over your peers who did not attend college. But it is hard to feel as if I have an advantage over those peers when I'm standing in a $35,000 hole. My wife Danielle and I when we're both done with our undergrad degrees, our goal is to be under $35,000 in debt. That means no family, no house, no new car, for a minimum of 5 to 10 years after we graduate. And we're not alone. Imagine the economic impact of an entire generation of college graduates who are not able to financially contribute to the state of Minnesota. Some elected officials, including some of those in this very room and on this committee, have told us that the tuition freeze is unobtainable due to the budget constraints of the state. Well, I'm here to tell you that you are lucky that you have options available to be able to correct these budget constraints. Unfortunately, some of our students a little lower down on the economic ladder, like myself, do not have a choice, nor do have options. In addition to working multiple jobs and living on ramen noodles and mac and cheese, our students are forced to deficit spend in hopes of brighter days ahead. Kind of sounds familiar. This year, we've had Chamber of Commerce, businesses, hospital CEOs that have signed on in support of the tuition freeze, not only because they don't want to employ graduates with tons of debt, because they realize the economic benefit that Minsky graduates gives to the state. The governor's budget funded Minsky at $107.5 million, and this equals almost a 10% tuition increase, an average of $887 increase per year on average at Minsky universities. However, we appreciate the added money that the governor gave, because some different institutions or priorities of the state did not get funded in that amount. We need the enrollment increase that you have all heard about. We need the special initiatives for the state, because we all believe that higher education is a benefit to the state, and the students need that inflation increase to be covered, because our students really need a tuition freeze. Aren't we all waiting for brighter days ahead? The funny thing is that you are all in a position in order to make that happen. The students are doing their part by attending the colleges and universities, but now we need to have you do your part. Help yourselves, help the students, and help the state by please fully funding a tuition freeze at our Minsky campuses for the next 2 years. And now I want to introduce a couple of students that would like to share their stories as well. Chami's first up.
Welcome to the committee. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for letting me speak today. My name is John Winnie Susanton. I'm a fourth-year student at St. Cloud State University. My major is Sociology and Women's Studies with a minor in Human Relations, and my career goal is to get my PhD. in sociology or Asian American studies, so I could teach. I'm taking 15 credits right now, and I'm working at least 25 hours a week to get through school. By the time I graduate, I'll be in somewhere between $15,000 and $20,000 in debt. And they asked me to come today to speak about how tuition increases has affected my life. First off, I come from a poor family in North Minneapolis. I've been working since I was 14, and unfortunately I was not able to save, because when I worked, all the money I had went to pay for bills at home. And well, I heard people talking about how people should make decisions at the age of 14 if they should go to college or not. The reality for me was I didn't even know I was going to graduate high school, because that's how it is when you grow up in the ghetto and when you grow up around a lot of violence. So I didn't even know I was going to go to college until I graduated. I didn't even know I was going to graduate. I'm the first one in my family to graduate from high school and the first one to go to college. And somebody also mentioned how students of color are having a hard time graduating from school, going on to college. I know what the problem is. There's no role models. Like, the role models for me were gangsters and, like criminals who got in trouble with the law, and that's all I saw growing up. I didn't see any people of color graduating from high school. I didn't see anybody who told me that, no, you can make it in this world. And that's what I'm trying to do for the kids. And, I'm just thinking about people in my neighborhoods and how tuition increases is going to affect them, because one of the reasons why students don't think about going to college is because they think that tuition is too much. And this is my third year at St. Cloud, and tuition has gone up $1,100 per year since I've been up there, like since my first year there. So people keep talking about how there's money has to go to other parts of the state too. And what I want to say is, by freezing tuition and by having students go to college, this will help the poor people in the state too. And this would also mean that by having more poor people go to college, you would need less money for other social services, like welfare and other healthcare programs. So I just want to say thank you for letting me speak today, and please support fully funded tuition freeze. Thank you.
Thank you. The next that we'd like to bring up is Angela.
Representative Eastland?
Well, this is just a continuation of your testimony.
Yeah. Why don't we get through is this the last person?
We can jump in, and then
we're starting to run out of time. There may be others who want to speak to the issue, perhaps against the bill. I don't know. We'll see. So we'll probably wrap up the testimony in a couple minutes, and then see if there are other testifiers and get to some questions if there are. Mr. Chair? Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Angela Shayla. I'm currently a senior at Winona State University. I was adopted as an infant into a very abusive household. When I left for college in the fall of 1999, it was the first time I had even grasped the slightest taste of freedom. I took advantage of that freedom to finally explore who I was. Consequently, my grades suffered since I did not attend classes frequently and studying was not on my list of free activities. After that first year, I took 2.5 years off of school. During that time, I left my abusive family once and for all. However, I've been struggling to support myself since. I thought that I would be unable to attend college for financial reasons. Being uneducated, it was hard to find a job that paid more than $6 an hour. That is barely enough to live on, let alone save up for college. In a desperate attempt to make some money for school, I participated in 2 medical studies. I subjected myself to 4 weeks of taking experimental drugs and being poked and prodded for hours on end, but it still was not enough. I was fortunate enough to receive a dependency override due to my family situation. I was declared independent by Winona State University in the spring of 2003 and began my college career again. I have been back at Winona State University for 2.5 years now. Last spring, while working 40 to 50 hours a week, between 4 jobs and 18 credits at school, I made the dean's list. I was working full-time while maintaining a full-time course load all the way up until 2 weeks ago. My friend and client, whom I was a caregiver for, passed away. I'm now unemployed and having to face the possibility of dropping out of school to find a job so that I can just continue to pay my rent and live. I have been very blessed to receive financial aid. However, it has not been enough to cover the skyrocketing costs of a college education these days. I'm currently over $20,000 in debt from college loans right now, with 4 semesters left to go before I graduate, and that doesn't even count graduate school. I've spent countless hours in front of the computer typing out essays and filling applications for every scholarship imaginable to help fund my education. However, due to my first year's poor performance, I still have not been able to bring my GPA up to an acceptable level for most scholarships. Most scholarships, if they don't have a 3.5 minimum GPA to apply, are generally awarded to the students who have at least a 3.5 GPA. I want to become a social worker and work in the child welfare, child protective services area so that I can help children who find themselves in situations similar to that of mine as a child. I want to help make their future look brighter so they don't have to struggle in the ways that I have had to. But in order to become a social worker, I need a degree. I only hope that I am able to complete the degree before I have to drop out due to financial reasons. I know that there are many other students who have situations similar to mine. It's hard enough to be without family support, but to also be without financial support, especially when the cost of tuition continues to rise at such an extreme rate, makes it extremely difficult to get a college education today. I fully support a tuition freeze for the next 2 years, not only so that I may finish my college degree, but also so that others like me may not have to struggle so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Shayla. And finally, was it Mr. Paul?
Justin yes. Paul? My name is Justin Paul, and I'm the president of Minnesota State Community, Minnesota State College Student Association. Mr. Chair, members, I just want to talk to you about a couple things real quickly because we are short on time. I want to talk to you about 3 of our most active members that we had in our association. We have 41 people that make up a majority of our student leaders in our association. The first one I want to talk about is Heather Garrison. She was a student at Minnesota State Community Tech College, Moorhead, and she was also our director of communications for our student association. After one semester of not getting enough financial aid, she had to drop out because she could no longer afford it. Another one is an alternate board member that we had. His name is Keith Klein. After returning from Afghanistan to serve our country, he tried going back to school, but could not afford to go back because he could not front the money to get into the college. Even though he was receiving college reimbursement, the money still needs to be put forward for them to afford it. And lastly, I think of Luis Carlos Vizcaino. He's a former student at MCTC and St. Cloud State. He tried working multiple jobs and taking as many credits as he could along with studying for those credits, but he still cannot afford to pay for all the credits that he took on. Those three people make up 7% of our student leadership of MSCSA. We ponder what 7% of all students across our association, if that was the case. 7% of all of our students just dropping out of college because they could not afford it. We ask what kind of economical impact would that make on our economy and on our social being as a state. We have police officers and other public servants across the state that help support the needs of Minnesota. Without people like Heather, Keith, and Carl and Luis, Minnesota, I feel, would be a shell of what we are today. But we are not just a private good, like many of us have heard. Higher education is a public good. A lot of our colleges, organizations have clubs on them and organizations that help promote social activity, not only within itself, but also at a state and national level. A couple examples of what we do for our communities is Rochester Community Technical College raised money for the Eagles Cancer Telethon and donated that money to them because that's how they want to get involved in their community. Another example is Anoka Ramsey Community College, Cambridge. They're raising money right now for a new education center in Sri Lanka because of the devastation over there from the tsunami. They're doing this because they feel the need to get involved in their community. We're not just involved in our community, though. We are also involved in our campuses. And I think a lot of our students that are working on this campaign that we're talking about today are not going to benefit from this campaign because they're not going to be here because of graduation. But they're doing this because they see not only a good, a social good for the next 2 years, but a social good for years to come because there's less debt load on our students. Students of the MSCSA urge you to support House File 670, which adds more money to MNSCU to freeze tuition. I do want to thank you for your time. Now we'll yield for questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Eastland.
Yeah, I'd just like to, first of all, commend and compliment you and others who have been around lobbying and I think educating legislators on this issue and the impact that students are facing all over in our state. And I think I'd like to just comment, nobody's really mentioned it, but this is more than a Minnesota problem. This is a problem that's happening all over the nation. I mean, tuitions is rising everywhere. So we aren't kind of an island of this thing happening. And I think probably most everybody at this table, if they were back in their college days, they'd probably be sitting where you are, saying what you're saying, feeling the same way you're feeling. But I guess I'd like to ask you a question that maybe you could give me some insight, because one of you did comment or referred to that some legislators had tried to be more honest and say that probably a tuition freeze wasn't too likely to happen. And others say that, well, yeah, we'd love to increase the tuition fees, and we support that. But I think the reality is that when you look at the leadership in the Senate, Dean Johnson just the other day, I heard him say that we have plenty of revenue in our state. That's been kind of the comment and the feeling of the House leadership. That's been the comment of our government or our governor. That when we poll, at least I do in my district, and I ask constituents, you know, should we be looking at raising revenue, or should we be looking at figuring out better ways to spend our dollars? And clearly, the sentiment is that people don't want their taxes increased. At the same time, people do want better education. You know, they want more money spent in K-12. They want better support of our higher education services. They want health care issues. People want things, but we have this dilemma of how do we fund them. When we look around the country, we look at governors all over the country are taking the same approach. We're going to try and deal with this financial crisis without raising taxes, because every dollar tax increase that goes up, there's a repercussion in the culture someplace. You know, I mean, maybe there's a job that's lost. I don't know. I mean, those are all the issues that are involved. But so with that explanation, I guess, I don't think anybody here is saying that they oppose your proposition. In fact, we all support it. My question to you is, given the political realities that we live in, where would you come up with the dollars to fund this?
Somebody, one of you want to tackle that?
Yes, Chair, members. Representative Eastland, we totally understand that getting a fully funded tuition freeze is difficult, but it is our duty, basically, to tell you the pains that our students go through on a daily basis to pay for college. Now, we would love, even though we only have 10 minutes left of the committee, to sit down in a room for hours and figure out where exactly the money would come from, but these days everybody's talking about cuts and reallocations. And the biggest areas of the state budget are in K-12, corrections, higher education, and healthcare. MNSCU educates 50% of the teachers, 80% of the nurses, 90% of the police officers in the state. It is counterproductive for us to ask for a cut in any of these areas, because the places that are going to be cut from are the places that are going to be helping us paying off our loans through employment later on. So we have to be reasonable, admit that the state needs to increase at least some type of revenue.
Representative Les, before we go to you, just in case, I want to make sure, is there anyone in the room other than those who are already up here that would like to testify? Because as we run out of time, I'm more than happy to have us carry on the conversation with the folks who are here for the remaining 7 minutes. But if there is anyone else who wants to speak to the bill, I want to make sure we give them a chance. Is there anybody who... Speak now or forever hold your peace. Okay, very good. Representative Blatt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to reiterate, I don't know if Representative Eastland was in the room when Representative Pawlowski made his remarks, but we filled the budget gap in 2003 largely on the backs of students who had to pay higher tuition, or their parents who were paying higher tuition. And whether you spell it T-A-X or spell it T-U-I-T-I-O-N, a dollar out of their pocket feels the same to the person paying it. They were tax increases. They were just targeted toward individuals who were paying, in this case, higher tuition. And that has, in the long run, the same kind of negative economic impact as if the taxes were spread out to, more generally, or came from different revenue sources.
Yeah, Representative Eastland.
Yeah, Representative Glass. We don't want to be a tit-for-tat thing here, but people make choices in their lives. People make choices what they want to do and what kind of things that they want to pursue based on what it costs. And, I mean, government plays a role in that when we're subsidizing things. But I think at some point the real costs begin to become a factor in the decisions people make. And I think we were forced to some tough decisions in the tax cuts that we did, or in the cuts that we did make in the last session. And that was not a fun thing to do. I mean, I don't think there's anybody here that said we enjoyed doing those kinds of things. But I think it's very different to say that a benefit that somebody was getting is no longer going to happen is a tax. Not giving a benefit that somebody has enjoyed in the past, in the future, is a tax increase. It's not a tax increase. It's a reduction in a benefit. And I sincerely appreciate these people's concern that some of the benefits they enjoyed were reduced. So now they have to make a choice. Am I going to still do it if the government doesn't pay for it? Am I going to pay for it myself? That's a tough decision. And I don't envy those people. I had kids that were in college in the same process, and I think it's important that we don't get into this issue of tax increases and partisanship and that sort of thing. This is a tough problem, and I think we all realize that it's important that we come up with a solution that works, because it's to our benefit that these guys can continue to enjoy their education. And if we need to do something to try and help the economics of that, so be it. We need to make those decisions. But I think we also have the political realities that are out there, and I just think we got to recognize that.
Any other comments or questions from the members? Representative Carlson.
Just to enter into the last bit of the debate, at times today some of the testimony and some of the members have commented about the subsidy to higher education. As a longtime member of this committee, I much prefer to talk about the investment in education, the investment in people, the investment in our workforce, and how society benefits. And that's why I have to come down on the side, I think, of Representative Latz's comments, regardless of how we spell it, when we talk about it as an investment that society benefits from as well as the individual. That truly was a tax on students, in my view.
Okay, seeing no other comments from anyone. Thank you very much for being here today, and thank you all very much. It's been very helpful, very informative. With that, we will hold over House File 670 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And Representative Norness, Mr. Chair, does that conclude our business for today? I think it does. With that, we are adjourned.